we get forgiveness from God out of the riches of His grace. You know, it just came to mind. If you become a criminal, you know, you break into somebody's house and you steal their stuff, and then you change your mind about what you did and you say, you know what, that was wrong. I shouldn't have that kind of life. And you go back and you take the stuff back and you say, here, I want to give this back. And the guy says, you know what, I'm not going to press charges, but you're never allowed on my property again. I don't want to ever see you. You know, he got a little forgiveness. He's not going to jail. But when God forgives out of the riches of His grace, it's like you take the stuff back and you say, I'm sorry, I shouldn't live this way. I don't want to do this. And you give the stuff back. He says, you know what? I want you to come and live with me. I want you to be in, I want to adopt you as my own child. I want you to live with me. I want you to come to my company, and I want you to work for me. I want you to get more of what I have to offer for free. Isn't that cool? That's the kind of grace that God gives. What do you hear about on Easter? What do you think I'm going to talk about this morning? Jesus rising from the grave. You guys have heard that before. I mean, if you've ever been to an Easter service at church, you hear somebody telling you that Jesus is alive, right? Is it true? Is Jesus alive? Because if it's true, that's what makes all the difference in the world. I mean, if we're just telling stories, Jesus isn't alive. You know, it's no big deal. It doesn't have any impact on your life. But if it's true, it has a huge impact. So if Jesus is alive, if that's true, here's a question I've got for you. So what? If Jesus is alive, so what? What does it matter? How does it affect your life right now? Because this happened a couple thousand years ago. What does it mean to real life right now? Have you ever thought about that? All the times that you've maybe been to an Easter service and you've heard somebody tell you Jesus rose from the grave, He's alive, has it changed you? Are you different today because of it? You know, a lot of people see Easter as just another day on the calendar. It's no big deal. You know, it's just maybe they're inconvenienced because stores close on Easter, so they can't go shopping. But a lot of people, that's Easter to them. So what? A lot of people who maybe recognize it as a holiday, they see Easter as, you know, the holiday is about a magical bunny that goes around delivering candy to kids. They get chocolates and jelly beans and plastic grass and baskets, and that's what Easter is about. Easter is about, you know, families coming together and eating ham, or, you know, coloring Easter eggs and hiding them so the kids can play a game and find the Easter eggs. That's what Easter is about to a lot of people, isn't it? You know, maybe some of us get dressed up and we make our semi-annual trip to church, and, you know, we will sit there and listen to somebody say, Jesus rose from the grave, He's alive. But what does it mean to real life right now to you? Because when the average unbeliever hears about this old Jewish man, you know, ancient guy, lived a couple thousand years ago, a lot of people hear that. And maybe they've heard some of the stories about Jesus. He turned water into wine. He took a few loaves of bread and a handful of fishes, and he multiplied it like magically into enough food to feed thousands of people. And he healed blind people and people who couldn't walk. He healed them. He rose a guy from the dead, Lazarus, and he walked on water. And then they killed him, and a few days later he came back to life, and then he flew up into heaven. And, you know, a lot of people might hear that and think, okay, yeah, I can buy that just about as much as I can buy the Easter bunny. I mean, if you think about it, if the average person hears that story, it doesn't really mean much to them. Some Jewish guy did some magic tricks that I'm not sure if I believe in, and that's what we're supposed to believe. Because a lot of people will hear that and they think, okay, when I think of people rising from the grave, I think about zombies. Well, those are the movies that we see. When people come back from the dead, they're zombies and they eat human flesh, and it's really gross. And Jesus talked about eat my flesh and drink my blood. And then he flew up to heaven. So you got flying zombies. And the world hears what we're talking about, and that's the way they interpret it. But when it comes down to the person of Jesus and turning to Him and finding forgiveness, No, it really doesn't matter. They could care less. What do they care about some guy who lived a long time ago? Because a lot of people don't believe the stuff about Jesus that they hear. They don't believe what the Bible says. They just think it's myth. And, you know, if you're smart, obviously we have to admit there's plenty of evidence that Jesus was a real man. He really lived. There's plenty of historical books that have been written on him, about him, even outside the Bible, people that knew Jesus was a real guy. But a lot of people probably say, well, you know, yeah, he was a real guy, but they probably made up those stories and embellished it a little bit. He said some good things. Maybe he was a good teacher. He made some good quotations that I can use on papers in college, that sort of thing. But when it comes down to it, a lot of people, you know, Jesus is basically the same as Buddha. You know, Buddha was a real guy, said some interesting things, but he didn't do anything that's real miraculous. Or Benjamin Franklin. Benjamin Franklin had a lot of good things to say. He had a lot of interesting additions to society. But he wasn't a miracle man. So a lot of people, that's what they think about. To the world, Jesus is nothing more than a storybook character, a figure in history that you might learn about in school or not. And I guess the question is Jesus really real? Not the man that lived. I mean, we know that Jesus was a man who lived a long time ago, and that's the truth. We know Jesus said some very interesting things. He taught some amazing lessons that really were, I mean, if you understand them, they can really shake up your life. So there's plenty of existence that he lived, and we know for sure that he died. I mean, if you read about how they went about killing him, there's no doubt about it. I don't know how much you know about the scourging that he got before he was hung on a cross. You know, you can get hung on a cross and live for several days before your muscles finally give out and basically suffocate. But before he ever went to the cross, he was whipped. And we're not talking about, you know, like a bullwhip you see on TV that, you know, that leaves the red marks on somebody's back. A Roman whip, the flagella that they're talking about, was probably had a wooden handle with leather cords coming off of it. And on the end of these cords were balls of lead, pieces of bone, pieces of glass. So when the Roman, the soldier who was well versed in how to thrash somebody, swung that on somebody's back, it ripped the flesh open. And some people died just from that beating. People died. And they were good at it. The soldiers who did it knew what to look for to make sure they stopped before somebody died, because the point was to just punish them as much as possible. And maybe they lived and maybe they didn't afterwards. So after this thrashing, Jesus goes to the cross. They hang him on the cross and he's there for a number of hours, already torn apart physically. The nails don't kill you. I mean, the nails obviously would hurt, but they don't kill you. You die of suffocation because your muscles give out. You can't lift yourself up to breathe anymore. So it came at the end of the day. It just so happened the next day was the Sabbath, when everybody's supposed to take the day off, and to leave bodies hanging on a cross was basically a curse to the Hebrew people. And they said, we can't do that. So they would go along and they'd make sure that, you remember the two thieves that were hung on the cross? They went and they broke their legs, because if they broke their legs, they couldn't push up anymore. They lost the ability to breathe. So they suffocated within a few minutes. And then they came to Jesus and they said, they're ready to break his legs. But they realized, no, he's dead. The professional Roman executioners looked up and they said, no, this guy's dead. And then to make sure, they jabbed a spear in his side, probably went through his lung and pierced his heart, and it says the water and the blood came out. This guy was dead, 100%. And then they took his body down. If you remember, Nicodemus got permission to take his body down, wrapped it up in cloth, kind of like a mummy, with a bunch of spices in. There was 100 pounds of spices, it says. So they wrapped up this carcass with spices and laid him in a tomb. You know, he was probably already stiff. So Jesus' carcass, wrapped up in cloths, has been mutilated and destroyed. This is a dead body we're dealing with. So we know that he died. There's no doubt about that. So the scriptures say he came back to life. This dead, mutilated, tortured body rose from the grave. And you know, the amazing thing, it shook up a lot of people. Interestingly enough, you know, the Jewish leaders who wanted Jesus executed, they knew the stories that he might come back. That, you know, people said that he's going to come back to life. You know, he'll be dead for 3 days, but he's coming back. And they had heard this. And they thought, maybe they thought it was rumors. So they went And they asked permission, they asked for Pontius Pilate, the governor, if you remember, to guard the tomb, seal the tomb and guard it, so that we make sure that the disciples don't break in and steal the body and then claim he rose from the dead. And so he did that. He sent the guards, the Roman soldiers, to go and watch this tomb to make sure that nobody could sneak in and mess with it. So it was 24 hours a day for the next 3 days. They were there watching it. But as a matter of fact, it's in Matthew 27 where it says that we ask you to seal this thing up so the disciples won't come and steal the body. And he did that. So you've got the guards there watching the place, making sure nobody messes. The tomb is sealed. If you know about the stone that's rolled in front of it, it's basically a cave that's been hollowed out, or a natural cave that's been, the shelves have been cut to set the bodies on, and then they roll this big, huge, round rock in front of it, which is usually anywhere from one half to a couple of tons. So he's not getting out of there. And they put the guards in front of it. So there's guards there 24 hours a day watching it in shifts, always awake, always watching, because these Roman soldiers, if they fail at their duty, if they fall asleep on the job, it's their death. They're executed if they fail at their duty. And we know what happens after that from what we're told in the scriptures. If you continue in Matthew, I mean, you get in the other Gospels, but in Matthew it says that early on Sunday morning, as a new day was dawning, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went out to see the tomb. And it says there was an earthquake, a great earthquake that shook the ground. And I can imagine, if God's coming back to life, if Jesus is dead, I don't know what kind of power was involved, but things shook. It says there was an angel who rolled away that stone and sat on it. And the soldiers saw this happening. The soldiers who had been guarding the tomb, these professional soldiers, were so scared. It says they fell into a dead faint. They fell like they were dead. They couldn't take it. And Jesus rose from the grave. And by the time the ladies got there, the angel said, "I know you're looking for Jesus, but he's not here anymore. He's been raised from the dead. And I want you to go and tell the disciples about this. Go and give them the message. Tell them Jesus is on his way to Galilee and you'll see him there." And these ladies must have been so shaken up. I mean, this is just a few days after he's been executed. And, you know, if you lose somebody that's important to you, and usually we have a funeral a few days later, you still got really tender hearts. I mean, you're still shaken up by losing somebody that you cared about so much, and you show up at their tomb, and an angel tells you, "They're alive." Can you imagine what you would feel, and that what these ladies must have been going through? Oh my goodness, Jesus Christ, he's alive? And so it says they were excited, they were scared, and the angel tried to tell them, "Don't be afraid." I think it's funny that they didn't pass out, but the big, tough Roman soldiers did. And he shows them. He says, "Come see where his body was laying. Look, he's not there. He's risen." And so they run off. They take off to go tell the disciples. And along the way, in Matthew, it says that they ran quickly from the tomb, and they were frightened, but also filled with great joy, and they rushed to find the disciples to give them the angel's message. And as they went, Jesus met them. Can you imagine that? Jesus met them. Greetings. Hey. Wow, what an amazing shock that would have been. And it says they bowed to his feet and they worshipped him. They held his hands, they held his feet, and they were just so thrilled to see him and realized who he was. And so they bowed down and worshipped him. And he said, "Go ahead, tell my brothers that I'm coming to Galilee. They'll see me there." And they did. It says, as the women were on their way to the city, some of the men who had been guarding the tomb, this is meanwhile, back at the tomb, some of these guards had revived, and they went to the Jewish leaders to tell them what happened. And they got before them, they said, "Listen, there was an earthquake, an angel rolled the stone away, this guy came back to life, I passed out." And the Jewish leaders, and this is what really gets me about this story, the Jewish leaders knew the truth. I mean, the guards told them what happened. And they didn't say, "Oh no, we killed the Messiah." They didn't say, "Maybe this guy really was who he said he was, if he's back to life." They said, they gathered all the leaders together and they said, "You know what? We gotta stop this story." They bribed the guards to They all got together. They all made the decision together to bribe the guards to tell them that the disciples, they fell asleep and the disciples came and stole the body. And they told the guards, listen, if Pontius Pilate, you know, if the governor has any problems, we'll take care of it. We won't let him kill you. Take this money, tell him the disciples stole the bodies. Because they were so entrenched in their lives. I mean, they had power, they had position. They were on the top of the food chain in the Jewish food chain in the Jewish culture. And they didn't want to give it up. Jesus so threatened their way of life that even when the truth faced them, they couldn't admit to it. They wouldn't admit to it. You know, that happens today. There's a lot of people in this world who are so threatened by Jesus and what he tells us to do. They don't want to give up their way of life that they refuse to admit the truth. They refuse to accept what God said, even though it stares them right in the face. It can be a tough decision because when it comes to making it, Jesus doesn't say, you know, follow me and keep on doing what you're doing. He says, no, you give up your old way of life. You stop the things that separated you from God. You stop the lies and the cheating and the stealing and the greed and the lust and the envy and the pride. You cut it all off because I can have nothing to do with that. You get rid of it and then you come follow me. And you'll find life. And he promises life. I mean, it's good stuff, but a lot of us, we don't want to give up what we're used to. So the question isn't really whether or not Jesus is real, because we know he's real. The question is whether or not we're willing to accept the truth about him. Because you know what? It doesn't matter what you believe. Truth doesn't change. You can believe when you die that you get to run your own planet. That's what the Mormons believe. You can believe that when you die, you get reincarnated as a cow. That's what the Hindus believe. But if it's not true, it really doesn't matter what you believe. The truth is going to happen. And Jesus said, there is no other way for you to find salvation. I am the only way for you to come to God. And if you don't do it my way, it's the highway, and the highway leads to hell. That's what Jesus said. And it was tough truth. And a lot of us, you know, we've got these things that we want to cling to, these appetites for sex, for money, for power, for us, whatever it is that we want to fill, you know, we keep feeding ourselves, knowing that it's the wrong thing to do, knowing that it's unhealthy, knowing that it's leading us to damnation. But we so much don't want to let go of that we refuse to accept the truth. We'll do whatever we can to occupy our mind. You know, let's cling to the bunny and the candy and the pretty Easter colors, anything to take our minds off the fact that Jesus is asking something that I'm not ready to do. And so we doom ourselves. People don't like that idea that Jesus says it's my way or the highway. And so they refuse to turn to him. They refuse to accept the life that Jesus offers, the grace out of the riches of grace that he offers, eternal life instead of death. Romans 10:9 says, if you confess with your mouth that Jesus Christ is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. I mean, it's not, you don't say magic words, you don't jump through hoops. It's just a change of life. It says the truth is that you trust Jesus Christ. You believe what he said. You change your life because you want to live the way God prescribed for you to live. And it's a tough decision. But there is no other way. Every other way leads to death, leads to permanent punishment because of the crimes that we have committed against God. And it's a tough decision to make. But it's the only one that's available to us. If you look at what the world offers, I mean, it offers stuff that looks nice, tastes good, feels nice. But it's kind of like Easter candy. You know, Easter candy tastes good, but it's not good for you. You can't survive on it. You know, the hollow bunnies or those chocolate coins. You ever get those chocolate, the gold foil wrapped coins, and so they look like gold coins, but inside they're chocolate. Those were fun as a kid. What if you had a handful of those, and somebody else came up to you and had a handful of real gold, and they said, I'll trade you. Trade your real gold for your chocolate. What would you do? I mean, obviously, especially in today's economy, you could buy a heck of a lot of chocolate with real gold. But we hold on to it. We don't want to let it go. We look at our stuff, our own hungers and desires and lusts and greed, and we don't want to let go of our worthless candy for what God has to offer of eternal life, of the greatest treasure you could ever imagine. We don't want to let go of what we've got and trade it for what God has. But Jesus doesn't stop offering it. He's offering it today. I don't know where you're at right now in your walk of faith. I don't know what you've dealt with. I don't know what you're holding on to. And you can keep, I mean, it's your choice. You get to make it. It's your life. And you can hold on to it if you want. But Jesus says you can't have both. You can't have the world and me at the same time. It's not half and half. It's one or the other. You give up the world and you have me, or you give up me and you have the world. And you know the results of both. One leads to death and one leads to life. So when people say, you know what, I like this stuff, but I know it's going to lead me to death, and they say, I'm willing to set that aside and say yes to God because I don't want to die. I want to live, and I want to have a good life, and I want to have a rich life, and I want to know what the riches of God's grace are like. And you say yes to Jesus, it says you can be saved. And it's that easy. There's no, like I said, no magic words, no jumping through hoops. It's just a matter of changing your own mind to turn to God, and He accepts you. It's that easy. Are you ready to believe the truth? Are you ready to accept the truth? If you are, you can do it right now. You can do it today. It's your decision to make, and you're more than welcome. Jesus says, I'm standing knocking, asking you to let me come in and turn your world upside down. Yeah, you'll probably have to make some sacrifices. You'll probably have to cut some things out of your life that you know are bad for you, that you know are killing you and dooming you spiritually. Yeah, you might have to give some stuff up, but it's worth it. It is so worth it because you will have a life of that lasts forever, that is full of real gold. If you want that, you can have it. Today's a great day to be alive with Jesus.